Welcome to the weekly broadcast of Let's Talk About It, produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5 Radio. Let's Talk About It is directed by Mario Espinosa, with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. Opening and closing narration is provided by Jean Brister. This program brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. Let's Talk About It is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Leticia Plancarte Garcia, Director. And now, let's join our co-hosts, Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley, for today's program.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. This is your wellness radio for both McAllen and Imperial County. I'm your host today, Maria Wyatt, and today we have an awesome guest. All of our guests are awesome, but especially if they're here locally, they're even better. So we have Bianca Nelson. She is a psychiatric social worker, too, and also, most importantly, she is a licensed clinical social worker for the Adult Anxiety and Depression Clinic. Welcome, Bianca.
Hi, Maria.
Okay. So today we're going to be talking about PTSD, or as we say, it's post-traumatic stress disorder, but mainly in the adult population, since you work at the adult. So I guess right now, there's a lot of talk because of COVID. We're going through this pandemic and hopefully out of it soon and go back to our way it was back in 2019. Because 2020 is a blur. It's like scratched out.
Yeah, everybody's trying to forget that year.
Yeah, and I mean, right now we're almost half a year into 2021, so we're hoping for the last bit to be better. And there, a lot of people had a lot of stress going on, financial stress, maybe a lot of people lost their jobs, lost their loved ones. But a lot of times we talk about, people who, PTSD is related to, like, people that were in the war, that it just not happens to them. It can happen to anyone. So let's get a little bit background. What is PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder?
Okay, so PTSD is a diagnosis that we usually give somebody who's been exposed to an actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violation. So just as you said, it can affect anybody, children, adolescents, teenagers, adults, elderly adults. It can affect any age. So when something traumatic happens to us, such as an injury, death, a sexual violation, where we feel like our life was threatened or in some way, we start experiencing certain symptoms that are part of the PTSD diagnosis. So those could be intrusion symptoms, so like thinking about the trauma, we call them flashbacks, so when you kind of feel like you're reliving it in some way. Some people tend to describe it as like a movie you're playing in their head, that they kind of just keep seeing that, image or, whatever happened to them occurring again and again. Sometimes it's just maybe a certain just feeling inside that you have, like this certain feeling inside, like it's happening again to you. A lot of heightened anxiety, which we call hypervigilance. And then there's also, a lot of other different symptoms of it. You can have some irritability, sleep disturbance, nightmares can affect your sleep. And you can have, nightmares about something that you witnessed or that happened to you. And you could also have, just a lot of maybe avoidance of things too that might remind you of what happened. For an example of this could be, if you were in a car accident where you maybe almost lost your life, you might be avoidant of going down that same street or intersection where that car accident happened because it reminded you of what happened. Or you might be avoidant of getting in a car altogether because of what happened. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can avoid certain things, and sometimes it's not really, you're not really noticeable of what you're doing at the time. And sometimes you are, you know you purposely are trying to avoid something because of it, what it reminds you of. Just staying busy sometimes is an avoidance also, you know, trying to stay really busy and just doing different activities or working, because as soon as you get some downtime of, you know, quietness or relaxing time, you start to think about stuff, and then that kind of will start causing a lot of those symptoms to occur. So, there's a lot of different ways that this can affect us. For a PTSD diagnosis, the symptoms have to be occurring at least 1 month after the traumatic event occurred. In acute stress disorder, it's less than a month. So it's at least 3 days, but less than a month. So if you were to come into our office and, because of anything traumatic that happened to you and you're experiencing all these symptoms, well, it was about a week ago, and when the symptoms began, then most likely you would possibly meet criteria for acute stress disorder. It's been at least a month since these symptoms have been occurring, since the traumatic event occurred, then it would be most likely PTSD.
So let's say that you have, somebody comes into the clinic and they're having like anxiety and, or they're having, they're having problems in their life, you know, it's affecting their home, their job, they're just not being able, and they say, oh, I have depression. I can't sleep, and I just, when you're assessing them, you know, is it, does it come that people come for one reason, and then as when you assess them, you find out that it's something that happened, like, when they were, like, younger? Can that happen, you know, because they have a PTSD based on an experience or a traumatic event that happened when they were, like, you know, more than a year ago, more like 10 years ago, thinking that, you know, they're coming in with something else, but it's based on, you know, a trauma that happened years ago.
Most definitely, yeah. So that kind of occurs quite a bit. Sometimes people already kind of come in already, you know, having an idea that, you know, I think it might be related to something that happened to me when I was younger. And some people have, really don't even put the two and two together, that they couldn't, one could be related to the other. Because like you said, one was maybe occurred 30 years ago or 20 years ago when it was, you know, a long time ago. And, you know, don't really think that that might be something that might still be bothering them or, you know, affecting them in some way. So that definitely happens a lot. And part of our intake assessments that we have for women, children, or, adults, children, or adolescents, is asking about a history of trauma, because that's one of the things that we cover, because, that definitely can have an impact on a lot of these things. With PTSD, you have, there could be a few co-occurring disorders, which means that if you have PTSD, these other disorders can be, you could also have these other disorders as well, so such as anxiety, depression. So it's likely that you could have more than one diagnosis. So you may, like you said, you may be coming for depression right now because you might be experiencing a lot of those symptoms, and you probably do meet that criteria for some kind of depression diagnosis, but you may also meet criteria for PTSD at the same time if you have that history of trauma that, like you said, is causing some impact as well, or it may be causing this depression in some way, triggering it in some way. So yeah, that definitely does happen, and some people don't even realize that they could even have this as a diagnosis because, like you said, a lot of it was more military related, that, you know, people thought of PTSD as just a military-only diagnosis, but it's only for people who were in the military. And, you know, obviously that's not the case. It can be anybody.
I know that a lot of people that also try to cope or self-medicate or they're trying to do things that alleviate some of their PTSD symptoms. Can you go and explain a little bit of what some people do to cope with their symptoms?
Yeah, so that kind of ties back to the avoidance. So the avoidance is some ways that you can avoid that I guess you would call more healthier ways, right? Of just trying to stay busy, maybe just avoiding going to certain places or, you know, avoiding driving places or seeing certain things, but there could be some unhealthy ways to avoid as well. There can be a lot of self-medicating with substances, whether alcohol or drugs. There could be binging. There could be, you know, some detachment from others, which is isolating, you know, a lot in your home or in your room. There could be a lot of different, you know, unhealthier ways that people tend to avoid. And that's when, you know, a lot of other issues can start occurring because of that.
Yeah. Now, and personally, I mean, I remember, my dad was in the Korean War, going back to the military. He was in the Korean War. And, you know, my mom says that when they got married, he had a lot of anger issues. And so as, you know, he passed away a couple of years ago. He was 84. But, he would talk, and he used a lot of alcohol. And I think that was a lot with coping. And she says that he would wake up, with some nightmares. You know, at least once or twice a week. And so when he talked about the war, he said that in Korea, he had to do like a lot of hand-to-hand combat. And you're like, oh gosh, you know, if he had hand-to-hand combat, you know, he's here, I'm here because of him. Obviously, you know, the other person didn't survive. So he had to be fine. So, I mean, I can't imagine. I remember he couldn't even watch. I thought, you know, I back then I rented the movie Saving Private Ryan, and my dad refused to see it. He saw it and he just walked away. He said, you can't see it. And he said he was, I think, in his 70s. And so, it just goes, and back then, of course, there was nothing, there was no treatment. There was, you know, what are you talking about? You know, get over it. You know, you're here, you survived. Thank you, blessings, you're here, so move on with your life. But still, in his 80s, he could still remember, and it was something that he didn't really want to talk about.
Yeah, definitely after, you know, even 40 or 50 years, it still can be very, very vivid to them what happened, what they witnessed, what they experienced. You know, there with the military, there are some people who even suffer from some trauma, and they weren't even in combat. You know, they may have a lot of survivor's guilt for something that, you know, they missed. You know, they weren't there for their, you know, the fellow military buddies or platoon that they were with or supposed to be with, and they weren't for some reason, and, you know, maybe a lot of them, you know, ended up getting killed, and they, you know, have a lot of this guilt that, you know, they survived and, you know, others didn't. You know, they should have been there in some way, and if they would have been there, then they would have, you know, stayed alive in some way. And, you know, it is really hard. It sometimes these symptoms will start occurring right after something happens to you, something traumatic happens to you. And sometimes, with some people, it's years later. It's not always the same. You know, I had one woman who, had been sexually abused as a child and never had any of these symptoms until, you know, one day she was like 30 something years old and woke up one day like it had just happened to her yesterday all of a sudden. Yeah. And we started having all of these flashbacks and nightmares and, you know, all this anxiety and like it had just happened to her and it was like 30 years before. But, you know, all of a
and
sudden.
And another she just put in the back of her head or before she made it, make herself forget about it. But if you don't get treatment, it's going to always be there. And
right.
Forget about it, but it's still there.
Right, and that's what I tell everybody. You know, you can avoid, become very good at avoiding, and it does work, but it's only short term. It's not a long term thing. I always like to use the analogy, it's like a Band-Aid on a wound that needs stitches. Like, you can put the Band-Aid on, but eventually it comes off, and you have to put another Band-Aid. And eventually it's going to wear off and come from another Band-Aid. It's just a short term fix for something that, you know, needs a long-term treatment for. So, you know, some people think that, you know, I put it behind me and, you know, I don't think about it, and, you know, it doesn't bother me anymore. But, you know, everybody's just different. Like I said, with some people, it takes years for them to want to come to treatment. Some people come right away because it's just, the symptoms are so intense, they don't know what to do.
But you know what, I think that's what you hit the nail on the head. It's just, it doesn't matter how long it happens, you know, you can still get treatment. You know, if it happened, you know, yesterday, today, or it happened, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you can still get treatment. And I just, you know, it's so important to tell the, our community members, our listeners out there, is that, you know, they don't need to be suffering, you know, prolonged suffering that they're going through.
Right.
Especially if they had trauma and they're just trying to cope and, you know, they might have, oh, you know what, I have to take care of the kids, you know, take care of my husband, you know, I don't have time for that. But, you know, when you're trying to cope, you're not really there for your family. Sometimes like, oh, there's, you know, I can't think about, you know, about myself. I have other things. Or
right.
For the people that are using drugs, you know, all these years that they've been using drugs to cope with their trauma, you know, avoiding it. Again, it's so much prolonged suffering that they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's so very exhausting.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think you're right. There's no time frame of when you can get help. You can get help no matter when it happens, something happened to you. You know, I had a man who, you know, he was 65 years old when he decided to come and get treatment for it. And, you know, his trauma occurred when he was like 8. So this was almost 60 years later. He was finally coming because that's when he was finally ready. And, you know, and he was successful in completing the trauma therapy and, you know, it took a lot of effort from him. And it was very difficult, but he was able to do it. And, you know, because there's just, it's something that just may never, ever go away. And whenever you're ready to do that, you can, no matter how long of the time. And as you said, it could be, you know, right after something happens, it could be many years later. But, you know, we've had the same with, you know, substance use, people who are just, you know, trying to self-medicate with all these things that have occurred to them. You know, some people finally come in after they've finally gotten clean and sober, and they're like, you know, I'm ready to address this trauma that happened to me. Now that I'm sober, I'm, you know, I'm experiencing all these symptoms, and I want to do this now, you know, the way I should have done it before, you know, instead of using, I want to try to, you know, get through this and talk about it and process what happened to me.
And I think what, like you mentioned earlier about, you know, when they're ready and trying to accept the treatment, I think a lot of people, I don't know, what do you think, that a lot of people don't want treatment because they're afraid to relive that traumatic experience. That's why people are sometimes, they're using drugs because, you know, if they get high on heroin or whatever substance that they use, some opiates, it makes them feel good and they forget about the trauma and everything else. And it's just, again, trying to avoid that memory, those flashbacks, those nightmares. And then, you know, going into treatment, you're going to have to relive those. And it's very scary. And they don't, I'd rather just continue trying to avoid it and putting somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. You know,
just like when my daughter, I tell her to clean her room, and, you know, all she does is just put everything underneath the bed or in the closet, and you go in, and oh, yeah, it looks clean, but guess what? No, it's still underneath the bed, it's still in the closet. Until that smell comes that, you know, she has somewhere in there some food hidden.
Yeah, it is very hard. I know whenever people are coming in, they, you know, I say, I want trauma therapy. I want to process what happened to me or talk about what happened to me. I said, okay, this is kind of what to expect. And not really to scare them into not wanting to do it, but more to prepare them for a lot of these things that can occur, you know. And increasing your symptoms in the beginning is very normal, very frequent, that thing that happens. Is that you may be experiencing these symptoms and it might heighten in the beginning of doing the trauma therapy because, like you said, you're kind of opening this can of worms that hasn't been opened in, you know, a long time maybe.
Yeah, so, okay, so the question is, why is it that, you know, two people might be in a car and they have the same accident, one person might have some, you know, trauma, and the other person goes, you know what, it happened, you know, it's happened, and they have no PTSD symptoms, there's no trauma, there's no PTSD. So why is that there's one person might just move on and be okay, and the other person might have impairment?
There could be a lot of different reasons. One could be that maybe they already had some trauma that happened to them already in the past. And so, you know, obviously the more traumatic events that have occurred to you, the more likely you will be to develop PTSD. So that could be a possible reason. Another reason could be is that, you know, maybe one person doesn't have as much support as the other. That definitely can make a, you know, help when, you know, you might have a supportive family or even just close friends or community that you can kind of get support from in regards to what happened to you versus somebody who maybe doesn't have any support at all, or maybe their family's blaming them for what happened, like the car accident example where it's like, well, you were the one driving, you know, you should have done this, you should have done that, and being told that when something like this happens to you is really hard, you know, doesn't really make it easier in, you know, coping with what happened. And some people might just already be kind of an anxious person, you know, depending on, for, you know, maybe other environmental reasons or genetic reasons, and then that, you know, that might also cause a reason for, you know, them to develop PTSD more than others. Children are tend to be more resilient than adults. So, you know, when something I don't know. I think it's just they have this like really innate nature of being able to bounce back from things. I mean, I'm not saying if they don't develop PTSD because, you know, obviously you work in children, so you know that they do, but I feel like it's not as common or, you know, as much as it would be for an adult. Like the same example of the car accident, the child and the adult, when the car accident, the adult probably is more likely to develop PTSD than the child. Again, not saying it's a for sure thing, but it's just that they have this like, innate nature that I can kind of bounce back from these things that bad things that happen sometimes. In some, you know, not all cases, but adults, I don't know what it is, but they tend to get affected more in certain cases. So there's just a lot of different things. I think the biggest is the support and the, you know, if they already had trauma that happened to them, that's definitely going to bring out other stuff.
I think it's just having them those protective factors, where people say, having the support from the family, you know, when they were growing up, knowing that it's okay, you know what, you fall down, and it's okay, let's get up, and we'll help you to get up, and it's okay. And then when somebody doesn't have that, you know, they were, you know, maybe their parents, they had parents that were absent, or they grew up with without any parents, you know, especially the foster kids. Foster kids have a lot of, and we know that a lot of times, well, the outcomes for foster kids is very, it's not very positive. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of kids who end up in the foster system end up with, you see a lot of trauma from them. And then they grow up to be adults, and so when something happens to them, it's just, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just so many different things that can happen to us. You know, I always say trauma is one of those things that you can literally walk out your door one morning going to work, or, you know, just your normal day, and something can happen to us, and, you know, our lives can be changed forever after that. It's just something you can't prevent, usually.
So do you see any more incidents of trauma, of PTSD, among women or men?
Probably women have a higher rate, I would say, than men do, but again, that might also fall back to what's reported, too. You know, I think men tend to have more of a difficult time, you know, reporting things that have happened to them, especially if it's like sexual abuse or something like that. It, you know, it's a little harder, I think, for them to discuss it, to report it.
Yes. And even if, like, for example, you would hear, like you said earlier, PTSD is very associated with people from the military, but then they don't want to come and say that they have PTSD because, you know, they're in the military. They're kind of like, you know what, I don't want to say like the macho, you know, the male, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, I was in the military, I can handle anything, you know, and then all of a sudden just say, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they were actually, they're the ones that were defending us. They were out there fighting, you know.
Right.
And then for them to come back and say, you know, I need help.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know what, we were talking about earlier about why people are afraid of getting treatment. But let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of the treatment models that we have for adults for PTSD. We've been talking to Bianca Nelson. She is a licensed clinical social worker for the Adults and Fighting Depression program, and we will be right back after a short break.
Let's talk about it, bringing community mental health issues to your radio. Listen each Sunday morning to KXO AM 1230 at 7 a.m. and now on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Or log on to KXORadio.com for a 5-minute podcast highlight of the show or the show in its entirety. This program is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO AM 1230 and FM 107.5. Let's Talk About It is presented as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. I'm your host, Maria Wyatt, and today's guest is Bianca Nelson. She is a licensed clinical social worker, a psychiatric social worker, too, at the Adult Anxiety and Depression Clinic. And today we've been talking about PTSD, or as post-traumatic stress disorder. In the first part of the show, we were talking about the symptoms and some of the behaviors people might have with PTSD. And I'm already saying PTSD because it's long, saying it. Post-traumatic stress disorder.
It's a tongue twister.
So we'll just stick to PTSD. We were talking about the signs and symptoms, some things that people might experience having a PTSD diagnosis. But now I want to talk about, treatment. There is treatment. There is hope for people out there that do have PTSD, even though their trauma might have happened when they were little, like Bianca, you were saying, it may have happened 30 years ago, or happened a month ago, or it happened just yesterday. There is treatment. So what kind of treatment is there, and does it comprise of?
So for the adult population, there's the cognitive processing therapy. So this is a type of therapy model that was originally developed for the military, because, as we've kind of talked about, the military do have a prominent amount of people that develop PTSD because of things that they experienced while in the military. However, it was later revamped so that way it could be generalized for other people too, that just not just the military. So that's the therapy model that we use. It's a short-term evidence-based treatment for PTSD. And it's also it's based on the cognitive behavioral treatment. And it also could include a written account. There's kind of two different versions of it. So you could either do the version where you write a trauma account, and then you can also opt out of that. And it can be conducted individually or in a group. So with behavioral health, we don't provide the groups for the cognitive processing therapy, or CPT as we call it. Right now, it's just individually based, which means just one-to-one with you, with the clinician and the individual.
Well, especially right now during the COVID, a lot of behavioral health has been providing this Zoom, via Zoom.
Right, or phone.
Or phone.
Yeah.
So with the CPT, so how many sessions was it? How many sessions are there? Because now, as many people know, years ago, we just had talk therapy, and somebody came for therapy, they stayed here for years, several years, 1, 2, 3, 10 years. But now everything's evidence-based, so it's just, like you mentioned, short-term, and it shows results. So can you walk me through a typical therapy session, and not just therapy, but the sessions, because like you said, it is hard in the beginning. The first part you said, when people go and get treatment, it is hard. Because now people do have to do their homework. They have to, the homework is given. It's just not just the therapist talking, it's actually the person going in and doing the work.
Right.
So can you
explain what the session is? So with all of our therapy models, you get homework. So there's no really getting out of it. Not to do the trauma therapy. There's homework with all of our models because, it's really important to practice the things that you're doing in session when you're not in session to kind of reinforce that skill. in the CPT, the cognitive processing therapy, or the trauma therapy, it's probably the most intense and probably has the most homework, I think, out of all of the models that we provide. It just has a lot of worksheets, written assignments, things like that that you have to, you know, reading that you have to do, and all of it is really important to do. And this model really emphasizes the importance of doing the homework, and if you don't do it, then you're that's kind of, you know, discussed as why, you know, it wasn't done, you know, what were some of the barriers that got in the way of not completing the homework, and, you know, and not really moving forward unless you're, you know, doing the homework, you know, what if it's a continued thing of, you know, of not doing it, you know, what is this maybe the appropriate model to do, or, you know, what can we do that can help improve that need to do it while you're not in session? You know, is it just, yeah, you need privacy, or you just don't understand it, or, you know, what is, or is it just avoidance? Avoidance will play a lot into that too, that, you know, because you're doing review stuff that has to do with things that happen to you, and it brings up a lot of those memories and emotional pain, and then you don't want to do it.
I think avoidance is a major part, because...
Oh, it is.
Like, for me, I avoid doing certain things, like cleaning. Or it's there and it just piles up, or doing the laundry or ironing, you know, it just piles up and piles up. We avoid it. And those are simple things.
Right.
It's like little things that everyday things, even at your job, maybe you're avoiding doing that paper or kids who are studying, you know, you're avoiding just studying or read the chapter. But when it comes to trauma, that's major. And
that's
a major obstacle to face that traumatic experience that you had either recently or a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people, like you, like I said, are aware of it, but most of the time they're not. You know, they say, well, I just had a really busy week this week. I had no time to do the homework. And realistically, it doesn't take that much time out of your day. So usually we kind of trace back, okay, what can we do to help, you know, change that, so that way next week you can do the homework. You know, what can we do? We need to schedule it in your week at some point, you know, schedule a time and day to get it done, or what can we do differently? And, you know, it always ends up going back to your point, but I just didn't want to do it. You know, it was more of that because of that, those feelings that it brings up, you know, that pain. So that's part of what we have to tackle in the trauma therapy, is trying to tackle that avoidance that, you know, that you may have. Even if sometimes there's avoidance of coming to sessions, too. You know, just, you know, I'm...
Even by Zoom? Even by phone?
Even by then, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was more so happening when it was in person, because, you know, they just wouldn't come or they wouldn't need to be scheduled. But, yeah, even by Zoom, I've gotten stood up waiting, and they don't come, and then, you know, you try calling them, and, you know, they may not answer. So yeah, it happens still too. There's probably really high dropout rate with trauma therapy, to be honest. But because I think of the topic you're discussing, not easy at all. So I think, you know, it can be really challenging. In the beginning, you're asked to complete an impact statement, which pretty much just you write down why you think that this traumatic event happened to you. You know, just what are all your reasons for why you think it happened, whether they're right or wrong. You just, you
and
know,
a
right.
lot of people, a lot, I know that a lot of people, women or even men, that then caused because of sexual assault, rape or something, they blame themselves. A lot of people blame themselves that it was the way I dressed.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's the, you know, I was out late, you know, I was wrong, you know, it's my fault. And they have a lot of they blame themselves for it.
Yeah, so you're right. They do tend to blame themselves for things that happen, whether or not it was, you know, most of the time it wasn't their fault. They couldn't prevent what happened to them, but they do carry a lot of self-blame. Sometimes they could even blame others for what happened. You know, and obviously they would blame the person that did this to them, but they blame maybe like their, you know, like in that example, they might blame their friends for leaving them there. And, you know, my friends wouldn't have left me, this thing would happen to me. So you just write down all the things that you think, you know, everything that you think is why this happened to you. And then you would also write down how you feel like this impacted you in five different areas. So one area would be safety, another is power and control, esteem, intimacy, and trust. So those are the five areas that cognitive processing therapy has identified as the five main areas where a person with trauma has been impacted in their life. So it'll impact the way that they, might see themselves, others, or the world in those five areas. And so they write down how they feel like they've been impacted in those five areas also. And so that's what we call the impact statement. They write that. It has to be at least one page. And then at the very end of the model, at the very last session, they rewrite it again. And then we kind of compare the two. We kind of read the first one again, then we read the last one again, because we kind of compare to see how much your thinking and everything has changed. So that's obviously the main goal of cognitive processing therapy, is that we're going to change the way we think about what happened. They really talk a lot about stuck points in cognitive processing therapy, and stuck points are just thoughts that are kind of keeping us stuck from being able to move on past what happened. So they could be thoughts about, again, ourselves, it could be thoughts about others, it could be thoughts about the world that we have that are still a key role in the way we think even now, even when the trauma's not happening anymore, but they still are coming up and occurring in other ways. And so we address, we start a set point log and identifying what everybody's set points are. Everybody's going to be different, and we start, writing them down so we can keep track of them, because as we go through the course of therapy, we start challenging them all, using them all in different worksheets.
What would be like an example of being a set point?
So an example could be, I can't trust anybody. That's a pretty common example. I can't trust anybody because of what happened to me, so therefore I trust no one. It could range for everything. It could be I can't trust myself. It could be, I have to be in control all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many, if I let people get close to me, I'll get hurt again. Or something bad will happen.
I can't trust any man, either.
Right. No man can be trusted.
No man.
Some people even identify specific race or, ethnicity that they can't trust too. Somebody in a specific race or ethnicity that they, that did something to them, they might feel the same, way about everybody in that same, race. So stuck points are not, facts. So would it be, I was raped? That wouldn't be a stuck point because that's a fact. That may be a fact of something that happened to you. These are more thoughts that are created because of what happened. So they may be, an if-then statement. If I do this, then this will happen.
If I would have left an hour earlier, I wouldn't have been in that accident.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have, maybe not... answer the phone or just all these things
another thing too that people tend to get mixed up is that they're not feeling. So, a feeling, I feel scared, or I am scared, it would not be a stuck point, because that's, describing the feeling. It's not describing a thought. So there could be a thought that is causing that feeling, and that might be the set point. What is the thought that's kind of triggering that feeling of fear?
Mm-hmm.
That I'm never going to be safe again. That might be the set point, there's sometimes really hard to identify with people because it's such a normal way of thinking. Sometimes they don't even see it as something that is, abnormal or unusual or in any way.
Then that's how they've been managing all this time.
Right. And again, it comes up in just everyday events. The trauma may not be occurring anymore, but those thoughts still are, in everyday event. It could be something as little as, I got in an argument with my husband and this is, I could have a stuck point because of that. It's triggering a stuck point from the past because of that. Or, the lady at the grocery store was rude to me, and this could be triggering the sixth sense also. It can be anything, mm-hmm. anything that can be, and a sixth sense can be triggered by that, and therefore then the, you know, a lot of these negative feelings can start to occur, and then it's just kind of that vicious cycle. Mm-hmm.
So how do you get it out of that cycle?
Through a lot of work, through, you know, going through, well, so you start with the impact statement. Like I had mentioned, you can have the option to do the trauma account, which that would be a detailed written assignment that you write down what happened to you. So the first one is different because it's just writing down why this happened. This one would give details as to what happened. You would be actually describing in detail what the trauma event was, you know, what had happened to the member, and you describe it, you know, with all the senses that you have, so, you know, what you remember hearing, what you remember seeing, what you remember touching, everything that you can remember.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It. If you have questions about services Imperial County Behavioral Health may offer that deal with today's show topic, please feel free to call 760-482-4000. Next week's show topic will be Youth Opioid Response Grant. Let's Talk About It is presented weekly on KXO AM 1230, FM 107.5, and KXORadio.com as a public service of Imperial County Behavioral Health Services.
So that's an optional assignment, and then the other ones are not optional. So, you know, we use a lot of just other worksheets, and all of them are based on trying to challenge a lot of these set points, you know, trying to use facts and trying to, you know, go through it again is to, you know, help them identify that a lot of these thoughts are not rational. You know, that a lot of these thoughts were created because of this trauma and not because they're based on facts. And so we do the worksheets together in session. That's usually what they get assigned as homework. And then the last part of the model is we're kind of breaking down each of those five areas that I talked about earlier in detail. So the safety, trust, power and control, intimacy, and esteem. We go through each of those in detail as to you know, what we are talking about when it comes to that, because esteem could be self-esteem, but it could also be esteem with others, just like trust could be, you know, trust in others, but it could also be self-trust too, trust in ourselves. You know, they go different ways, so we kind of go through each of those, you know, one each session, and you know, also again, doing some worksheets based on that, reading some information on those, and discussing them in detail. So some people will have more stuck points maybe in certain areas, like let's say for trust. They usually have a lot of stuck points in trust. So we may sometimes spend more than one session on trust if we need to, because, you know, there's a lot of stuck points that are in that area that we need to address, and then, you know, I'll spend more than one session doing that.
Yeah, because trust. You know, you're going to say, you know, once you lose your trust, it's really hard to gain it back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is hard. It's hard.
It is.
You know, you may say, oh, I forgive him, but do you trust him? No, I don't trust him. Well, you have to trust again.
Yeah.
Move on. But, so, when you were talking about, you know, the statement, do you have, a lot of people, option, do they have, you know, you said it was an option to write their, what happened to them. Do a lot of people write it, or do you have more people that just tend to not want to write it?
Surprisingly, I have a lot of people that do want to write it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it depends on the length, because there's no really minimum length, but, you know, because it just depends on, you know, how much this you remember. Some people don't remember that as much because it happened so long ago, and some people can remember, you know, regardless of if it happened long ago, they can remember vividly exactly what happened. So there's a lot of details. So, you know, I had a lot of people who've written 5, 6, 7 pages, some people a little bit shorter, and actually you write it twice. So you choose to write it once, then there's a reassignment of writing it again. So, they write it twice, or sometimes the second time it's even a little bit longer. Maybe they remember some more things that happen, or you know, other details, and they'll include it. So a majority of them do write it, I think, because they, it maybe feels like they kind of get it off their chest. And then they have their assignments to, or their homework is to read it to themselves every day. So it's kind of, it goes back to that exposure of, like, you know, constantly exposing yourself to this, you know, these details of things that happen to you and kind of desensitizing you from what happened.
So you're trying to teach them some coping skills, how to cope with that traumatic experience that they had. Going through all those five areas that you had mentioned, you know, the trust, the intimacy. What were the other three?
The power and control, esteem, and safety.
And safety. So all through all those, they're trying, you know, so you give them tools to kind of like cope with those.
Yeah. So the trauma therapy, it kind of, well, the cognitive processing therapy kind of dives right in to everything. It's kind of one of those rip the band-aids off, like you kind of just dive right in. I think with the TFCBT, the trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy for children, I think they do spend a little bit of time of doing some coping skills first to kind of help them with a lot of the symptoms that they make experience. But what I recommend for somebody who maybe is brand new to therapy and they're kind of considering doing trauma therapy, and but they've never done therapy before in their life, sometimes they choose to do cognitive behavioral therapy first, kind of learn some basic coping skills and techniques that will help them manage a lot of those symptoms.
So after you finish the five, the safety, the intimacy, the power and control, the trust, what was the last one?
Esteem.
Does that mean that they're done? They're done with the trauma, or they continue?
No, so then they rewrite the impact statement.
And then rewrite it again.
And then we kind of compare the two from the beginning and the end.
Is there a change? Have you seen that there's a change between the first impact statement and the second one?
Yes, usually there's a significant change.
What do clients say, or what is it that they, when they're reading it, do they kind of like,
you know, when they read back at their first one, they're kind of like, well, I can't believe that's how I felt, that's what I thought, you know. I think so differently now, looking back at how, at what happened.
Mm-hmm. So with all that's how many sessions in total? Like, what is the minimum?
It's based on a 12 session. But like I said, I do sometimes, there's a need to spend, you know, an extra session doing certain assignments or working on more, you know, certain sections longer. So it could, you know, definitely go beyond the 12 easily.
You know that the clients with PTSD, you probably when they're starting the therapy, is there more like a dropout rate than once they've gone through the midway or because, you know, again, a lot of people don't really want to relive their traumatic experience, and they just are knowing that they'll have to going through the therapy. Do you see like they have a lot of a dropout rate, or, you know, after you start engage them and you get to know them, they stay there through the whole session?
Yeah, that's probably the highest dropout rate is probably in the beginning.
The beginning?
Yeah, probably after just the first one or two, and then it's
usually sometimes. Do you think that the drop down and come back again and then try it again?
Sometimes, very few, but sometimes, yes. But, you know, they're like, you know, I wasn't ready then, but I am now.
I think, and you mentioned before in trauma-focused CBT, with the model of a trauma-focused CBT for children, you have a parental component. You know, the parents are involved. How about in CBT? Does that involve any other working with family members? You know?
It doesn't really have that component. You can. I mean, it doesn't say that you can't, but there's not really a significant part of it where it really focuses on a collateral or significant support. And you know, with most of our adults, we don't really have that. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And so they don't really, or they don't feel comfortable having somebody knowing, you know, personal details. You know, there's been some people who haven't told their spouse of what happened to them, and maybe that's their primary support, but they don't want them to know. So it's definitely a little bit harder. It's mostly up onto the individual on their own.
Yeah, because it's kind of it's important, you know, having that support. And we did mention earlier, why is it that some people have PTSD and some people don't when they were in the both at the same place? And having, I think, having the support from the spouse, learning this is why he's behaving the way he's behaving. This is the way things, why things happen, because of the way he behaves, the symptoms get it more like an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That way it'll be, we can get that support from him.
Yeah.
That's, for in trauma specific people too, we have that for the parents because that is their support.
Uh-huh.
They're there.
Right.
Yeah. But in reality, it's true, like you mentioned, a lot of people, you know, they don't want to, especially if it's a very intimate, or very traumatic, they just don't want anybody else to know. And we were mentioning about military, sometimes, again, going back, the military, you know, it's very hard for them to admit that they do need help. But I think right now things are changing. I just spoke recently with somebody from the veterans here at the county, and he mentioned when, you know, he had PTSD, and we were talking about the dogs that we have under our innovation project, positive engagement team, and that he felt really comfortable and having that connection with the dog. So we're trying to, you know, as behavioral health as an agency, we're trying to find ways to provide assistance to our community through the model that you have, the cognitive processing therapy. Is it therapy or treatment?
Yeah, therapy.
Or through positive CBT, or now we have the dogs. We're coming, they're coming back. We had 4 previous ones and they were all adopted out.
Oh, yeah, I saw 2 pictures of them today on the doors of the clinic. I can't remember the
yeah,
2 of them.
It's Stevie and Betty Coop.
Yeah, those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Betty is a Labradoodle and Stevie is a mixed husky.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 3 more on the way, so we'll have, I think, 4 or 5. But yeah, going back. We're trying to get all these services back, you know, give them to offer them from the having the dog so our community members that come to seek services feel a little bit more comfortable being in our clinic when we go back to the clinic.
Yeah.
And we are going back to the clinic soon.
Mm-hmm. And that'll probably really help with the trauma therapy because doing it over the phone has definitely been a challenge.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody has the Zoom option. So, you know, with it being on the phone, it's been really hard trying to go over handouts and worksheets and
you can't really
like that.
That empathy, that relationship that you have with the person, it's kind of like not, it's like an invisible, like it's like a barrier.
Yeah, that's definitely gonna be one upside, I think, to having, you know, the face to face again for people who, you know, are and choose to do that, is that with this cognitive processing therapy, it's really more beneficial face-to-face to do the worksheets together and, you know, have that, you know, one-to-one contact with you can understand, I think, a lot more.
Yeah, especially you said that there's a lot of homework and going over the homework. Sometimes you might not have, they might have questions, and how do you fill this out?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so hopefully with everything, you know, the pandemic is over soon. We can start doing the face-to-face. Some people still want to do Zoom and phone, so.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I think we've got the Zoom down now.
Yeah.
Everybody was kind of at the beginning, where do I click? You know, how do you turn?
Yeah, I think once you get it set up on your, you know, your device or whatever you have, you just, you know, do the one click of the link and it locked, you know, opens it right up for you.
Yeah. Now it's just easy. It's a system. And here we go. But yeah, going, I mean, going with back with PTSD, again, it has no discrimination. It can happen to anyone on any socioeconomic status. It's the way that people process it, and how people cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a maladaptive coping skills that they've learned through using drugs, self-medicating themselves. But there is still, you know, regardless of how long, again, we have to reemphasize how long it's been, the traumatic experience, there's treatment. That, again, you know, last week or it happened, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It's how people deal with it. You know, I've had a family member that was in a car accident, and, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh, and I'm never gonna drive again. I don't feel comfortable driving again. I go, you know what? That's why we have insurance. Don't worry about it. Nothing's gonna happen. It's just worst case scenario is that, you know, your insurance goes up. So it's how they're managing it. Well, Sienta, thank you so much for being at the show. Thank you so much for letting us educate us on post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And for our listeners out there, if they need more information or they want to get treatment, they can always call our number. Is at 442-265-1525. Again, that is 442-265-1525. Again, thank you so much, Bianca.
Thank you, Maria.
And congratulations on your baby boy. Soon to be.
Thank you. Yeah, my life's been more hectic.
Three little ones under the age of 5. Woo! Well,
oh, yeah.
And for our listeners, thank you for listening to us. Have a good week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on KXO AM 1230. And each Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on FM 107.5. This weekly broadcast is produced by the Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio under the direction of Mario Espinosa with the technical assistance of Carol Buckley. Opening and closing narration is provided by Gene Brister. Co-hosts for tonight's program were Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Let's Talk About It brings weekly community mental health issues to your radio. This program is produced for and presented as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Leticia Plancarte.